The Outlet. The talk of Queenstown.
Welcome to The Outlet. I'm your host, Brent Harbour, and in this podcast, I talk to Callum McLeod, one of the founders of Wanaka's beloved Cinema Paradiso. We explore the fascinating journey of bringing movies to life in Wanaka. From humble beginnings to iconic moments, we talk about the evolution of cinema culture, DIY spirit, and unique experiences that shaped the community's love for film. Callum shares insights into his cinematic adventure from intermissions to special connections with Sir Peter Jackson.
For the latest local news, sport, information, and entertainment, download the Queenstown app. This is The Outlet.
G'day, Callum. Welcome to The Outlet podcast.
Why, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Now, we're going to talk a bit about Cinema Paradiso, but first of all, Callum, can you tell me how your love of movies and cinema started?
I go way back to a place called Inverness in the north of Scotland, at a cinema called La Scala and the Playhouse. There were two in Inverness. That era, we were still playing God Save the Queen at the start, and that used to get whistled down, which was great fun. And then the whole intermission, usherettes walking up and down the aisle, selling cigarettes, as well as there was the smoking and the non-smoking, the balcony and the... And it was just, I don't know if you've seen the film Cinema Paradiso, it was a cracking environment, you know, and you ended up, I think the first movie I think I can vividly remember watching was The Sound of Music. I got dragged into it by every auntie and every visit. We're going to see The Sound of Music, and it was quite, you know, you're dealing with quite a inspirational story. It's quite the thing. And then, of course, you get into some of the big screen classics, like absolutely leaping out of my seat like everyone else when watching Jaws, and then the hiatus, because that was the youth, and then you'd end up doing university, and I remember going to uni and watching Starship, the battle cruiser coming on Star Wars, and the shots being fired, and you're going, oh, this is amazing, and then you realize, oh, hanging something shooting at it, and then this enormous impact of, I can still remember it, of the this, and it went on forever. And then the engines, you know, and it's like, oh, that was just sensational. It was such a groundbreaking. You look back at it now, it's a bit heath, but at the time it was groundbreaking stuff. I think that was probably, you'd go back to the La Scala and the fish tank and the halftime, I'd say it would be the cracking start.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, it was kind of like that for me too. I mean, we had the Hollywood Cinema in Avondale. Used to be our go-to cinema when I was growing up.
There you go.
And I'm the same as you. I remember we actually went into downtown to Queen Street to see Star Wars when I was 10. And it was at the Cinerama. And at the time, it was kind of billed as surround sound, which meant it just had some speakers going up the walls instead of just the two at the front. But I had the same feeling as you, as you know, watching that movie with my family was just incredible. So that sort of just gave you a love of cinema when there was something that really connected to you, eh?
Oh, totally. And it's Star Wars is a classic example, because it is a galaxy far, far away, and it's a story that's it's a very human story, but it's quite distant, and so it's actually transporting you to an entire new world. You know, the whole, and it's fundamentally based on some principles of science, so it, you know, it's quite educational as well, you might say, if you're stretching a point.
No, but it was the kind of thing that every other science fiction movie after that was disappointing.
Yeah, exactly.
Once you'd seen that, it was just like, oh, that's not Star Wars.
And you switch on to the telly and you end up watching Captain Kirk fighting, oh, hang on, that's a human in a suit, you know, it's like...
that's right. And then we thought, hey, we've got Battlestar Galactica on TV, and we thought, oh, that's okay, that's not too bad.
Yeah, exactly.
it was good. When you first arrived in Wanaka, so how did you and Andrea decide that what was needed was a cinema?
There was actually three of us in the start. There was a good mate of mine, Brian Hildreth, who I ended up riding a bike across the States with last year, because he turned 60 and he got depressed. He thought his life was over. So we thought, we'll go and do something totally extravagant. Andrea, Brian and myself were in town doing, at that point there was three pubs. There was the skiers pub, the farmers pub, and the sort of locals builders pub, you know, and there the three should meet. That was it. You know, if you wanted some sort of entertainment outside of the stuff that we all did, which was ride bikes and slide down hills, there wasn't a lot going on, you know. I'd taken this love affair, and I lived in Auckland briefly for a couple of years. You go to the movies twice a week, come down here, and it's like, so you'd end up saying, oh, let's go to the movies. And that entailed getting in a car, driving across an unsealed Crown Range to Queenstown, which at that point was, from memory, is about an hour and a half to 2 hours of a trip, depending on the conditions and the weather. You'd get there, you'd spend a small fortune eating out somewhere, even if it was, you know, takeaways, go to the movies, and then drive all the way back, you know. So it was half a day, and it was, I wonder if this could maybe work here, you know. And the old town hall, which was a brilliant building, acoustically was fantastic for specific things. You couldn't hold a conversation in it, but orchestras thought it was delightful. It had a projection booth on the end, so it was like, oh, I wonder if that's quite the thing. And ended up meeting a gentleman by the name of Charlie Gilligan, who was, when he became a projectionist, it was like a 3 year, I think it was either 3 or 5 years of an apprenticeship and looking after these wonderful machines. And he said, oh, there's another guy who's, I think his name is Henry James, but he's got a set of projectors called carbon arc projectors set up in his place in his garage in Auckland. And he'd retired from a cinema in Auckland, and they basically said, look, we're retiring you and we're retiring these projectors. We're going to upgrade so you can take them with you. So he did. And they were beautiful bits of kit. They were, I've still got them in our garage, and hopefully I'll set them up one day. We went out, and it was a cracking old road trip in an HQ Holden up to Auckland to pick up this stuff. You know, had a great night talking absolute memorabilia with this wonderful projectionist. Then loaded everything in the back of the HQ, which was just suspension to the floor, and basically wheelied back to Wanaka. Got here, Charlie came up from Dunedin and helped us, you know, get these things back together, which was it's an engineering feat in itself. Because the projection booth in the town hall was set up for carbon arc projection, it had the two holes in the roof so you could extract the fumes, had the two lamp houses and the two holes in the wall for the pictures to go through. It was just plugs and everything. It just, so it slotted in beautifully. And I remember one of the old custodians was like, I'll never take off that biggest, you know, pain in the, you know. And he'd been using this to store lights and lamps in, and so we had to clear all that out. We got it started, got the screen from Dunedin and used old bits of downpipe to put this screen together, because the screen came down, and then every weekend, this is for a Friday, Saturday or Sunday, and then every weekend we hoisted it up to the ceiling and cleared the hall out, and the hall was used by the Small Bore Rifle Club, the bowling club, whoever it was that was using the hall. And yeah, it was okay, maybe we'll try and make this work. And the goal was to get the three of us to the Sundance Film Festival in the States, right? That was the make enough money to do it. And from there, you know, the seed was born. And there's some fantastic stories that came out of that old town hall before the council, in its infinite wisdom, decided to knock it down. But it was a cracking space. Freezing cold in the winter, boiling hot in the summer. But it was such a community gathering that there's a gentleman by the name of Tim Henderson, who was the sergeant of the police at the time. And he reckoned it was the best thing that had ever happened to the youth of Wanaka at the time, because it didn't involve alcohol. You could socialize. We had two movies that played on the weekend. We opened with Wesley Snipes' thriller called Drop Zone. And the second movie that night was Brad Pitt and Anthony Hopkins in Legends of the Fall. And then we were off and running. You know, it was the old town hall had the hard-ass seats, and we slowly decided that, you know, we better get some comfort in here. So we got a couple of second-hand couches and put them in, and I think the second weekend there was a fight because somebody wanted the couch and somebody else didn't, and somebody else said it was mine, and eventually we expanded the couches and seats to about our standard audience at the time, which was about 40 or 50 seats as a maximum, and that meant that every time that we cleared the hall, we had to put all the couches and seats on the stage. So it was a Jane Fonda workout every weekend, trying to get the thing up and running. It was good times, really good times. We went from the town hall because the Tony Hall, as I said, got knocked out. And it was, a lot of people would say, oh, it was, you know, Naito who wanted the money, and oh, it should have stayed, and acoustically it was perfect. But we had an earthquake that year when we were in the hall that was about the same size as Taiwan got at the moment, 7 and a bit, it was almost an 8. There was a crack in the projection boot that you can put your finger in, and after the earthquake, you can get your whole hand in. And it was always one of those thoughts about, oh, you'd hate to have a full house and something happened. So that got knocked out, and we got kicked out, and we moved up to what was the old Central Electric Power Board building. We moved up there, and that was, we went from weekends to, I think it was 5 days a week, got set up and built the tiered seating, and thankfully didn't have to lift the couches onto a stage every night, and operated there for 14 years. And then the Catholic Church moved out, and then up to the new place they got on Aubrey Road, which is a fantastic building. The old one was deconsecrated, and we had a conversation with the landlord, and we'd been looking for a new home for a permanent home for the cinema for a while. And everyone I spoke to was, how much can you pay? How much space do you want? How much can you pay? And I ended up sitting down talking to Duffy, who's a wonderful, wonderful man, and ended up being our landlord there for 15 years, I think, we were there. And we sat down together at a cup of tea, and he said, so Callum, what do you want? And my jaw dropped. I looked at him and didn't say anything. And he said, has no one ever asked you that before? And I said, no, normally they ask me how much. And then the conversation peters out. And we spent about 2 hours. And it was, and he said, well, what do you want? What's your vision? You know, I said, well, if you imagine a Hundertwasser hedgehog that you drive past and you go, wow, what's that? And so we spent, he's an architect, so that sort of piqued his interest. So we spent about 2 hours discussing how to design the world's best Hundertwasser hedgehog. And then, as Humphrey Bogart said at the end of Casablanca to Claude Rains, it was like, Duffy, I think this is the beginning of a beautiful relationship. He gave us the lease, and it was amazing. He's such an amazing man that we were in the place, putting in tiered seating and all sorts of, you know, insulation and sound dampening. We were there for probably 6 or 8 months, I think, doing this. Opened, and he came across for the opening, and when we opened, he said, oh, Callum, I suppose we should get round to signing this lease then.
Wow. That's great. It looked like a great space, so I've seen lots of video of the cinemas there. So are you still doing intermission? Because I remember intermission as a kid, and it used to be so frustrating because you just wanted the movie to keep going on. But it was a huge part of what you did initially anyway. So what was the thinking behind keeping that going?
The intermission was, being Scottish, it's a great way to get generate an extra, maybe a couple of dollars through the till. But also, in the town hall, it was such a social occasion. We would regularly have, 20 minutes, half an hour of intermission, and it wasn't the rush to get the movie started. It was, oh, we've got to go. Oh, this is so, because instead, outside of the pub or going round to a party somewhere, you'd just having that occasion when everyone gathers and yiggity yaks and talks about, and you're gathering around something that's happening.
Yeah.
That's a mutual experience. So you're going, the guy in the hat, what's he going to do? And, the girl, oh yeah, what do you think? Oh, yeah, it's about weird. So you kick off a conversation, and just chasing people back in was kind of, it was fun, and it brought the community together. And then we went up to the Power Board building, and first comment, people were saying, oh, it's too far out of town. Because Wanaka, when we started, Wanaka was 2,500 people. Look at it now, it'd be tickling 15, but the 18. We got up there, and, oh, you're not getting rid of the intermission. You can't get rid of the couches. Oh, no. So we kept the intermission, and thank goodness we did, because it's part of the experience. And if you look at the Bollywood, which is a much bigger beast than Hollywood, it's all based around the intermission and the eating, and they approach it a different way. And it is a social occasion. It's mum, dad and the kids going to the movies, irrespective of whether it's R16 or whatever. And it is this event that everyone gets involved in. And some of the stuff we've had with the Bollywood stuff with, you know, the young larrikins are all whistling and booing and cheering, and not quite as much and much more reserved in the UK. But, you know, if the hero smacked the villain, the whole place is like, oh, hey, you know, and get into it a bit, you know. And then the intermission also is, if you look at the length of some of the movies, when we had, I mean, Dune is 3 hours something. Killers of the Flower Moon is 3 hours 20.
Oppenheimer was over 3 hours as well, yeah.
Exactly. And it's, I challenge anyone to put a can of Coke into a child and get them to sit still for 3 hours. You know, even if you don't have an intermission, around about half time, the door starts to open.
Yeah.
Because people are going to the loo or, yeah, you know, that sort of stuff. So people say it interrupts the movie. And I said, well, having individuals leave at regular intervals is worse, I would suggest. And then nine times out of 10, you have tourists, visitors that come in here, and they'll say, you've got an intermission. Oh, I've heard that. That's weird. And then they leave going, I love the intermission. And I said, yep, bring back the intermission, brother. It was a campaign. Spread the word.
I think it's good, actually, yeah. Because it is that social thing that you talk about. And a chance to talk about the movie. Because nowadays, as you say, you see it. And then as you're driving home, you kind of talk a little bit about the movie. But when you're trying to figure out what's going to happen, you know, I always try to, if I go out with my wife, I try to guess the ending halfway through the movie. That's that guy.
Yeah, exactly. And you have, and you know, they have that conversation, and it always leads to, because everyone, Robbie Burns had one of his famous quotes was, if there's a gift that I could give us, would be to see ourselves as others see us. Or another version would be, you know, walk a mile in another man's shoes, right? But you have that conversation about anything, and most people will go, oh, it's the guy in the hat, right? And somebody else will go, oh, no. You know, it's a bit like Bruce Willis is dead. And everyone goes, what are you talking about? And then, oh, my God, Bruce Willis is dead. You know, so you get that alternative viewpoint that's gold. I love it.
Getting people talking to each other. So, you see with the cinemas with seating, I mean, you had couches, but like I've seen other things, airline seats and cars. It's just a different way of going to the movies, isn't it? Because you can, everything is just so uniform and nice and tidy, but it's a little bit chaotic, isn't it?
Exactly. It's the quirk. It's the, again, moving, we moved into the place that the current cinema's in, which is on Branson Street, and we have one screen, and we built the second screen, and I was telling people, they're going, oh, how is it? What's it like? And I said, well, we've got these flash new leather seats, and it's sort of like the cinema, a paradiso, but without the grunge. Absolute response from most people was, I love the grunge. Don't lose the grunge. You know, literally, I think it was The Guardian that said, this is more like, it's not like a movie. It's like going round to your mate's place to watch something, you know, but it's just a superb quality sound system and good projection gear. And that's the bit, you know, is if you can feel relaxed from the off, you're on a winner, you know. And the one of the bits that I think I'll miss most about the cinema is there's gold, is people coming out going, that is the best cinema experience I've ever had. Ostensibly, it's not, okay? It's like this, the couches are a bit rumpy, and it's in a Lockwood build, and but it's the overall package tied together, quality sound system, good picture, and you're relaxed and comfortable straight away. You know, it's gold class before gold class was ever gold class, for sure.
I think so. And you're getting that shared cinema experience. I mean, that's kind of why I love cinema too. It's just not the same to see it on your TV. It isn't.
No, I agree.
Going to the movies is still, I love it. I love it when the lights go down. I love it when the movies start. It's just, you know, but I mean, from what you've got with sitting in cars and sitting in couches and airline seats, I just think that's absolutely brilliant. It's just brilliant.
Oh, it is. And even we had two doors up from us on, I probably can't mention the business, but there's a dentist and he upgraded his chair. So we got the dentist chair and stuck it in the front of the cinema. You know, people are coming in going, it's a dentist chair. Oh my, whoa, yeah. It's probably the first time and people used it, you know, quite regularly. It's the first time you sat in a dentist chair and not got really tense.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, take a bit of the fear out. Oh, that's so good. And you actually did have something from Peter Jackson in one of your cinemas too, didn't you?
Well, they said a couple of bits of Peter Jackson memorabilia in Annapolis. We had some rocks from Lord of the Rings. We had the first Lord of the Rings session, which was in the what's now the Bottle-O. There was a whole pile of people that came up, and they all had elf ears and prosthetics and stuff. They were cast members because it was all of New Zealand got involved in making.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably the best was I went up to a movie conference in Auckland. We had a sound system, and in the original town hall, it was the very first screenings was basically Brian and myself and our stereos cobbled together. What we didn't realize at the time, but obviously came to realize pretty quickly, was you can up the, when you take the sound system, which was there at the time, was running on the film, it's a voltage, and you up the voltage, which gives you a louder sound. But by connecting two stereos together, we did that, but we also doubled the amperage. So I think it was Stargate, and there's a spaceship comes to land on one of the pyramids, right? And it's part of the film, and the film, whoa, whoa, and it lands, and then there was a whoa. And it blew at the bass out of my set of speakers. Oh, we had to disconnect it, and away we go. So we upgraded the sound system a few times since then. But then when we went to New Place, I was coming back from a conference, and a mate who was running a cinema in Central South Island was not doing too well, and it was based around a holiday park. And he said, look, it's unsustainable. I think I'm going to sell the gear. And I was like, oh, yeah, let's go and have a look. And I walked in and was blown away by the sound system. And he said, yeah, it's pretty good. It had been installed by Peter Jackson in the Embassy Theatre in Wellington.
Wow.
For the original screening, the first screening of Lord of the Rings. So quality gear, right? So we got hold of it and stuck it into what's now Cinema One on Branson Street. We'd also got a pile of kit from what was at the top of the gondola. There was a film called Kiwi Magic that was running in 70 mil. And we got a whole pile of gear from that when we were setting up and put these big sub-basses called subwoofers called folded Ws, and the big servos, huge bits of kit that'd be maybe 3-4 meters along and 2-3 meters tall and deep. And so we banged those into Cinema One, and it's and I've been using it. We've been screening June, and at halftime I go in and say, how's everyone doing? How's the temperature? Blah, blah, blah. Oh, by the way, do you know, I've got a simple message here to save the planet. And I said, are you enjoying the sound system? Are you enjoying the worms? Oh, yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. I said, well, the sound system. And I explained the story that it's Peter Jackson's. And I said, so don't buy new shit. Simple message. Old shit still sounds good, you know. And we upgraded it and put this sound. Oh, yeah, yeah, that's the. And literally, it's the sound system in Cinema One. It's one of those things that every now and again you get someone, you've probably got a really good ear yourself. But someone will turn up that's got a really good acoustic ear, and they'll go, and it's the combination of the sound system with the Lockwood wood and the dampening of all the couches, and it just produces a beautiful sound that still gets me goosebumps even talking about it. But that's the connection. And you talk about 2 degrees of separation in New Zealand. It's tiny, right? But there's a direct link to Peter Jackson, Viggo Mortensen, Elijah Wood, Moon. About when Tom Cruise was here, he was going out with Penelope Cruise at the time, and they stayed at Furry Key up the lodge, and he came to the cinema. So he went and he snuck in and watched it. So one of the stories I always tell in Cinema One is that one of these couches could have graced, could have had a Tom Cruise bottom on it. So that the 6 degrees of separation is such that we've got Peter Jackson and Tom Cruise. Well, that connects you straight to Hollywood mainstream right there. You know, I'll claim it.
Oh, look, I'd take that too, Callum. I really would. So, I mean, you've had some great times over the years. Is there any favourite moment that really sticks out from the cinemas, boy?
Oh, this, from the old place. I mean, it was such a... Because we used to allow dogs into the cinema, in town hall, and then we unfortunately got challenged on health, not health and safety, but health and hygiene grounds. But hey, there you go. That's another story. But the, when the dogs were in, this woman would always come in with her, and she had a German Shepherd, and eventually people started getting pissed off that the German Shepherd had a seat. She used to buy a ticket for the German Shepherd so that no one could kick the dog out of the seat, right? But anyway, the, there's also, there was a guy at the time who was used to come in with his Jack Russell. Jack Russell was called Baz, right? And he was Baz the Movie Hound. And people, we were making ice cream then, and people would put the ice cream puddles on the floor when they finished, and Baz would go around and clean up the ice cream, right? So we're screening a film called Scream, the original Scream horror slasher type thing. And in the middle of this, Baz licked this poor woman's leg. she hit the roof off like the 4th of July. The whole place erupted, thinking, oh my gosh, what's going on here? And it was just a poetic moment in terms of cinema. You know, there's been so many little bits and pieces going. Anyone that's worked there, you know, there have been some really good people. But I would have to say that at a classic moment in the new place, when a kid who's 21 comes up to me and he goes, is your name Callum? And at that point, I'm having a bit of a freak out going, depends who's asking. Yeah, my name's Callum. And he said, well, my parents brought me here when I was one. In the old cinema, and they said, when you've got go back, you've got to go back and see the Paradiso and say hello to Callum, you know. And I was like, I hugged him like a brother, and we had a couple of beers. And people say it's the best cinema experience they've ever had, which is very flattering and beautiful. But when you've got someone and it sticks in their memory enough to send their son, you get that visitation back, that connection. It's gold. You know, I can't think of any other industry that would have that sort of impact and that sort of feel that transcends, you know, 20 years.
No, that's incredible.
Sensational. It, you know, one time we had in the old place, and it was very rumpty and technically old gear, but we had I've forgotten his name, but he was the chairman of the American Academy of Motion Pictures and Performing Arts, right? And he left his card, right? And I looked at the card and went, that's Oscar. There's on the front is Oscar. And I said, that's an Oscar. And his name, and he was a chairman. I was like, oh my, whoa. And on the back, he'd handwritten, your fame has spread far and wide. Keep up the good work. I mean, this is the Scotsman and the back of the Wanaka, you know, you couldn't get further from anywhere on the planet. And here he is going, keep up the good work. You know, it's there's so many, but it's really hard to pick. But that's, like, you know, a few insights, I suppose.
Now you've sold the cinema, Callum. So how did that all come about? That must have been a hard decision for you.
Oh, it's massive. It's, I mean, 30 years is a long time doing anything, but people would regularly say to me, oh, you know, don't you get sick of it? And it's like, well, you find something, that the classic old cliche, you find something you love doing, you'll never work another day in your life. A lot of that is so true. I thoroughly enjoyed the whole thing and setting the whole thing up and all the changes, the change from 35 mil to digital, that was massive for us. The Lord of the Rings was the first movie that we could get day and date on release. And the only reason we could do that is we agreed to screen it three times a day, every day for a month with nothing else screening. And then because it's a film, it's a print that's made for you, right? So it's expensive. So digital made, not only did the sound quality go through the roof, but the availability became way, way easier, you know? But it was incredibly hard. But it's time. It's just the right time. You know, it's 30 years you've been doing it. And we went through COVID and that was hard for everyone. For us, 65% of our business wasn't allowed in the country. And the other 35% wasn't allowed outside of their house. That was hard. That was getting back to on our feet was, you know, at the time I was doing council and stopped doing that to focus on getting some semblance there, getting back up to, and then you go through the whole COVID injection passport and all that malarkey. And we get back to where we are now, which is up and running, charging. The whole, if you talk to anyone in Queenstown, they've had the best year ever, you know. It just seemed like the right time to hand over the reins to someone else. And also the fact that it's not a corporate, no disrespect to the corporates, but it's a local family, you know, and good people. Hamish and Carolyn are really good people. I've been, as part of the handover, been working. Their kids are in there, you know, and it's like, it's the same as when we started. Angus is, one of Angus's first memories, that's Angus, my son, is, you know, puddling ice cream and rewinding films. And so there's another family that are doing the same, and they'll be setting new memories and hopefully continuing the legacy, which is, I like to think of it as a wee iconic bit of Wanaka that'll hopefully stick around. And that's the quirk that makes Wanaka a bit quirky. It's not necessarily just another place that's got, you know, beautiful vistas and whatever, you know, we've got around New Zealand. It's just that little bit of point of difference, which would be nice to see it carry on.
Any other plans for you? You're just going to kick back for a while?
Kick back for a while. My plan is, as I mentioned before, that Brian and I went on a bike ride from Vancouver to the bottom of Colorado. It was 4,000 kilometers over 46 days of camping. And at that point, that was me going, you know, I'm 61, 62. How many more of these have I got left in me when I can camp for 40 days on the trot? So it sort of sparked a little bit of a flame, which I'm hoping to fan. And there's some schoolmates I've kept in touch with from Scotland who are potentially keen to do Land's End John O'Groats in July, and maybe do a bit of continuation of that, which ends up cousin in Denmark and cycle down to Portugal. So hopefully the celebration of riding in the States was 9 weeks of riding, which was the 9 years I spent on council. So with a stroke of luck, if I can get past Andrea that we had 30 years in the cinema, maybe I should have 30 weeks of riding. I can't see that flying, but that's one of the goals.
I'll back you up. Maybe your son will back you up on that.
Yeah, perfect.
Oh, look, Callum, it's been so good talking to you. I think you've created just such an amazing legacy in Wanaka. Your family's been involved. And so, look, congratulations on all that. Thank you for everybody who's ever been in the cinema for putting that together, because what an amazing experience and an amazing journey you've had. And I really appreciate talking to you.
Hey, not a problem, Ben. It was delightful. A trip down memory lane.
On Buzzsprout, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. The Outlet.
The talk of Queenstown.
Thanks for listening to The Outlet, your local interview podcast for Queenstown. Now, if you have a story or an interview you think should be featured on The Outlet podcast, please get in touch by using the contact button on your Queenstown app. The Outlet is produced and published by the Queenstown app and supported with funding from the New Zealand Public Interest Journalism Fund. All episodes of The Outlet are available on the podcast button on your Queenstown app and wherever you get your podcasts.